Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the Chills at Will podcast. Thank you so much for listening. This episode deals with righteous anger, as today is about 2 weeks or so after the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police, which has once again shined a light on the inequalities faced on a daily basis by people of color, with African Americans hugely disproportionate victims of abuse, harassment, violence, and death at the hands of law enforcement. Are you angry? Are you angry that there are people who refuse to acknowledge that racism still plays such a huge part of life in the United States in 2020, despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary? Are you angry that George Floyd was killed over $20? Are you angry that Dylann Roof, an avowed white supremacist who killed 9 churchgoers at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina, was given Burger King by the police after being arrested peacefully? Are you angry that Ahmaud Arbery was a suspect, according to 2 racist vigilantes who saw something off about a black man jogging in their neighborhood? Are you angry that Carolyn Bryant is still free, 3 years after she admitted that Emmett Till had not grabbed her or acted sexually menacing towards her, and 65 years after Emmett was brutally lynched and killed for not knowing his place in 1955 Mississippi? Are you angry that Emmett's killers were never brought to justice, that an all-white jury dismissed charges against men who were clearly responsible for his death? Are you angry about Trayvon Martin, about Freddie Gray, Michael Brown, Breonna Taylor, Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland, Eric Garner, killed over selling some lousy individual cigarettes, Stephon Clark? Are you angry about Botheem John, killed in his own apartment in Dallas as a case of mistaken identity by a police officer? Are you angry about Philando Castile, killed after telling the police officers that he was a licensed gun owner before grabbing the gun slowly in the glove compartment and still being killed? Are you angry that the officer who killed him wasn't convicted of a crime, even the milquetoast manslaughter charge that was brought against him? Are you angry that those who complain about police shootings are often called unpatriotic, criminals, rabble-rousers, too sensitive, or reverse racists? Are you angry that Philando Castile's case, a textbook example of a violation of gun owners' rights, was never taken up by the NRA for some weird reason that I'm sure has absolutely nothing or something or everything to do with his race? Are you angry about Atlanta's Rayshard Brooks, killed in the parking lot of a Wendy's? The list of names, sadly, goes on and on and on. And yet, we as a society are not listening to those voices decrying racism. We're being cowards, ignoring the obvious signs of racism, either bailing out by calling it systemic and therefore out of our hands, or pawning it off as something that can't be changed in individuals, that just because someone else is racist doesn't mean that I have these tendencies or am somehow complicit in racism. And yet, I am not here as an expert. I acknowledge my blind spots, some unconscious, and maybe some that are not, as a white man. I'm not here for anything today other than to point to some moving examples of this never-ending story of racism so that we can be reminded that this is nothing new. This has not originated with Trump or the alt-right. We as a society have had African Americans and other oppressed groups calling for our attention for decades and centuries. We have ignored their pleas for far too long. I'm here on this episode to hopefully give you a text, give you literature, give you poetry that shows why this anger, why this building anger is righteous anger. I'm here to ask, can you at minimum recognize that this anger that we see in Minneapolis after George Floyd's death, in New York, in Seattle, in Los Angeles, in Chicago, in cities too numerous to mention, can we see that this is a righteous and justified anger? That it's a historical and festering anger? Elie Wiesel and others have said that the opposite of love is not hatred, but is instead indifference. And wouldn't being ignored make you angry? Wouldn't racism, both in your face and also subtly presented, make you angry? Today, and on part two of Righteous Anger, we will discuss texts that trace a chronology of righteous anger, of human justified anger that justice has not been served. Sadly, though the symptoms presented may be different, the illness of racism will not be much unchanged. In Langston Hughes' poem, The Colored Soldier, published in 1919, and in the first chapter of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, published 33 years later, I will discuss Ellison's unforgettable, unsettling text in part two. And today on part one, we'll discuss Langston Hughes' The Colored Soldier, which again was published in 1919. Important to know, right after the flu epidemic, more importantly, right after World War I. Langston Hughes is perhaps best known for his poem Harlem. You know it. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Etc. Well, the dream of equality and an equal voice for racial minorities is still an unrealized one. And the dream has been continually delayed and put off. The last line of Harlem is for me a haunting one. And I picture a version of it I read somewhere that incorrectly wrote the line, "Or does it explode?" without a question mark or any punctuation. For some reason, that version is what I conjure up when I think of Hughes' last line to give myself chills at will. There's an infinity feeling to it, a timeless statement, a question not needing an answer. It's a naked statement of fact. Hughes' poem, The Colored Soldier, features Hughes as sorrowful, passionate, elegiac, and angry, rightfully and righteously so. According to Teaching the American 20s, an educational website, the poem was written in response to unabated racism and increased violence against African Americans upon their stateside return after World War I. They encountered increased hatred, and in April 1919 alone, 10 black veterans in uniform were lynched, with some of them burned alive in the South. Hughes addressed the fact that the soldiers had been promised equal treatment upon their successful and patriotic completion of military service, only for them to come back to a white populace eager to help African Americans remember their place. In a true case of not being worthy, I will read the poem with what I hope is the appropriate anger that Hughes intended when writing it. Being that there are no recordings of Hughes reading his own poem, which of course would have the proper flair in the proper places, nor are there any other known recordings by other readers, I will do my best to do justice to his passion. One note before I read the poem, I will not be saying the historically laden and fraught and disgusting racial slur used in the poem, as I definitely do not feel comfortable and it is not my place to read that. The Colored Soldier is truly a poem that gains another dimension with an oral performance. And even my flawed reading will give you a taste of this justified and old and still brewing anger. This is The Colored Soldier by Langston Hughes. My brother died in France, but I came back. We were just two color boys, brown and black, who joined up to fight for the USA when the nation called us that mighty day. We were sent to training camp, then overseas, and me and my brother were happy as you please, thinking we were fighting for democracy's true reign and that our dark blood would wipe away the stain of prejudice and hate and the false color line and give us the rights that are yours and mine. They told us America would know no black or white, so we marched to the front, happy to fight. Last night in a dream, my brother came to me out of his grave from over the sea, back from the acres of crosses in France, and said to me, "Brother, you've got your chance, and I hope you're making good and doing fine, 'cause when I was living, I didn't have mine. Black boys couldn't work then anywhere like they can today. Could hardly find a job that offered decent pay. The unions barred us, the factories too. But now I know we've got plenty to do. We couldn't eat in restaurants, had Jim Crow cars. Didn't have any schools, and there were all sorts of bars to a colored boy's rising in wealth or station. But now I know well that's not our situation. The world's been made safe for democracy. And no longer do we know the dark misery of being held back, of having no chance, since the colored soldiers came home from France. Didn't our government tell us things would be fine when we got through fighting over there and dying? So now I know we blacks are just like any other. 'Cause that's what I died for, isn't it, brother?" And I saw him standing there straight and tall in his soldier's uniform and all. Then his dark face smiled at me in the night. But the dream was cruel and bitter and somehow not right. It was awful facing that boy who went to die. For what could I answer him except, "It's a lie. It's a lie, it's a lie, every word they said, and it's better 1,000 times you're in France dead. For here in the South there's no votes and no right, and I'm just an N-word in America tonight." Then I woke up and the dream was ended, but broken was the soldier's dream, too bad to be mended. And it's a good thing all the black boys lying dead over there can't see and don't know and won't ever care. Wow. "Anger is a gift," said Raging Against the Machine Zach De La Roca. And though I see and know the veracity of his statement, it strikes me as a sad and frustrating existence to be so often angry. Hughes has lost his brother in a war fought for a country that didn't want him, that didn't nurture him, that didn't offer him space to breathe and grow, that in fact thwarted his personal and spiritual growth from all sides. He is, and who would not be, passionately and wall-poundingly mad. And for the reader, there is that special sadness that there will be no relief for Langston Hughes and his family. That his brother has died nameless, faceless, and for what? Definitely for not even a scintilla of improvement in the way African Americans will be treated after the war. In the 1,000-page book that is Donald Trump's gaffes and racist comments, his sexist and xenophobic comments, his heartless speeches and retorts and tweets, there is one comment that I cannot forget. In November 2017, surviving members of the legendary Navajo Code Talkers, who helped the United States immensely during World War II, were honored at an event at the White House. While supposedly talking up the virtues of these men, some in their mid-90s, Trump could not resist throwing in a random and tone-deaf and racist reference to Pocahontas Elizabeth Warren. I cannot even begin to compute what it would be like to come from a group of people who have been victims of a genocide, have been made to assimilate to the white man's religion and culture and language, yet still fighting with valor and courage and innovation for a country that has desecrated your land, your people, your way of life. And then, when receiving award for your work, an award for which you have had to strain against your hunched body to literally reach, the representative of the United States government finds an opportunity to make a stupid, non sequitur joke in your presence. I think of Hughes when I reminisce on Trump's callous and ignorant statement. Langston Hughes' anger is an anger for which there is no salve, no opportunity for a second chance for his brother or for the country who so thoroughly disregarded and disrespected him. This conversation with his dead brother. I mean, how many of us would love even a glimpse of a deceased loved one in a dream? This conversation is haunting and heartbreaking, with the naivete of Hughes' brother in direct contrast to Langston, who is possessive of the right answers, and the one left to wrestle with the utter uselessness of the African-American contribution to the war effort. Anger clouds the heart and soul of the angry, and I have to assume that there is no satisfaction for Langston in being right, but instead a hollow and bitter feeling in bursting his brother's idealistic bubble about a meritocracy that will supposedly bring about equality. I often caution my students against the overuse of anything in their writing, be that profanity or lifeless words like good and bad, hyperbole, etc. And exclamation points are chief among these avoidances. But I really appreciate how Hughes uses these exclamation points freely in the last stanza. Coupled with the short, declarative clauses that make up the final lines, Hughes has truly built a bonfire of rage that plateaus so successfully in the poem's last words. And I quote, "Then I woke up and the dream was ended, but broken was the soldier's dream, too bad to be mended. And it's a good thing all the black boys lying dead over there can't see and don't know and won't ever care." The reader can't help but leave the poem aggrieved, pissed off, raging, feeling empathy for one or more reasons, whether it be an identification with having been a victim of racism, having been the victim of a lie and moral swindling, having lost a brother or loved one to an early death, or various other reasons. And now, we multiply Hughes' pain and anger, multiply by the numbers of people affected directly and indirectly by race and violence, both judicial and extrajudicial, by those for whom justice was a myth, a joke of a rigged process. We multiply this pain and anger by the number of people for whom flashing lights in the rear view are enough to induce an anxiety attack. We multiply and multiply and multiply. That's a lot of anger. Are you angry? Thank you for listening to today's episode. Please spread the word about the Chills at Will podcast, passing it on to somebody who you know will enjoy it. I'd appreciate if you can like and subscribe at the podcast hub, which is chillsatwillpodcast6.podbean.com. Chills at Will podcast, the number 6, that's all as one word, .podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N. As in night.com. Chills at Will Podcast 6.podbean.com. You can find me, Pete Real, on Facebook and Instagram at Chills at Will Podcast, all one word, and on Twitter at Chills at Will PO1. That's the number 1. This podcast is a one-man job. It's a labor of love. And I'd appreciate you recommending it to any like-minded friends and loved ones. Until next time, my hope is that you will continue to find that writing that gives you chills at will.